Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello, and welcome back to the Atlanta Sports Guys, who have indeed reconvened. Everyone is back. We're full go here on this Friday afternoon. Max Markovich, after being away for a bit, just the world traveler that is Max Markovich. Max, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I regrouped in the Rocky Mountains. I shut off all connection to football and, like, intentionally, willfully kept to the Michigan score from my knowledge until I could watch it. It was really difficult. But we're back. We're full go. We're really optimistic about the Falcons. We'll get to that. Excited.
Are you still optimistic about Michigan, though?
There are concerns to be worked through. but yes. Yes, I am. I'm still optimistic about Michigan.
All right.
Interesting. I mean, we're right there. All of our teams right there in the top six, top seven in the nation. Also here, Garrett Chapman of 99 The Game, a dopey millennial, self-proclaimed dopey millennial. Garrett, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Oh, fantastic. Another busy day. Mm-hmm. Got college football tomorrow. Got high school football tonight. Got Falcons. And then Braves all weekend, too. And then the Hawks are seemingly already back. So... Shortest off season in sports.
Well, we got someone said, like, this is how out of it I've been with, like, the Hawks to this point, where I saw the Japan games and watching some James Wiseman lobs this morning, where I was like, oh, the NBA is back too, and that's interesting. And oh god, I'm an absolute sicko for thinking about how James Wiseman worked for the Warriors this year. But also I saw that, like, Jalen Johnson and insert a random player who will not be playing in this Hawks rotation, Forrest, is I believe something. His name's something Forrest. Have not gotten clarity on his full name. Do you guys know who I'm talking about? Is it a Trenton Forrest? Is it a? I forgot this guy's name. He is on the roster.
Chase Thomas is down bad if he's looking at these guys.
Well, did you know? Like, they're just going to Abu Dhabi very soon.
Abu Dhabi.
Yeah, and yeah. I didn't know that that was a thing. I just completely
17-hour flight.
Man. Trent
would you
Forrest
do that?
Is
I would
name,
do that
by
in a
the
heartbeat,
way.
By the way. I would do that in a heartbeat.
Abu Dhabi, would you actually?
100%. No question. I'm also Zero somebody chance. Wants to go anywhere. I'll go anywhere and everywhere.
Anywhere?
Especially for a basketball game? Hell yeah.
You're just like North Korea. It's lovely this
I'd
time
I'd go to North Korea, yeah.
If they let him.
If they let me in, I'd go.
Would you
and
really?
Let you, yeah. Let you out.
Or, yeah,
letting
let
you
let
out
me
is
too.
The key.
More
I cannot stress that enough.
Yeah,
that's probably
what is
the most
happening?
Important part. No, I'd go anywhere in the world. I would be happy to go anywhere. Maybe that's Somalia. I think that's where
Antarctica.
I draw the line at Somalia.
Too cold. Antarctica can't do it.
I'd go to Antarctica, 100%.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm getting dragged around. My wife. Speaking up. I don't know if I've seen Max since the wedding, but
drop the hard W there.
I did the hard W. Where she's a world traveler, so. I will be going out of the country yearly with this woman, and we'll see all the different places. So I will be vaxxed out to the max wherever we're going. It's just like, give me whatever. Like, how many injections do you need? I am, yeah, just vax me up, whatever it is. Because I had a friend who went somewhere in South America not too long ago, and just they were outlining all the different vaccines they had to get. And I was like, man, okay, this is a thing.
Yeah, I came back from, I went to Peru many years ago, a couple years ago now. But I came back, got a little dose of Montezuma's Revenge, brushed my teeth with the water. Ugh, don't do that.
Yeah.
Just don't do that. It was an accident. It was like at 5 o'clock in the morning. I was about to go, we were about to leave, and I just brushed my teeth really quickly, and I was just, it was awful. Don't
what happened?
Do that. I lost about 15 pounds. I'm not even kidding.
What?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, it was over the course of like 3 weeks, 2.5, 3 weeks. I lost about 15 pounds. It was bad.
Just from brushing your teeth
with
the water?
I brushed my teeth with the water. And yeah, so there's like some bacteria or something in the water, and I got very sick. It was not great. Wow. I had to go get fluids and stuff every now and then. And it was really bad.
Man.
Yeah.
That's
so don't do that.
Visit Peru.com. And
it's beautiful. I'd definitely go back in heartbeat, too. That's a funny thing.
Who needs to brush my teeth? Who needs a cleanse? Who needs a Peloton when you can just go to Peru?
Just order a bottle of water from Peru and you'll be fine.
Mm-hmm. A cleanse the old fashioned way. So I was the only person in the sports bar watching the Falcons and the Seahawks on Sunday afternoon, with my foot propped up and just really, really propped up. Like it was a good spot. I had not done this since last year because living in East Tennessee, for whatever reason, we don't get the Falcons very often. So I'm like, I pay for League Pass. I pay for MLB TV. Most NFL games I can get, and I don't feel like Sunday Ticket is worth it. Like, that's the one I don't do year over year. And I have to, like, organize. I'm like, all right, I'm going here, and I call them ahead of time. I'm like, hey, I'm coming in. I'll be this weird guy eating some buffalo shrimp and taking notes on this yellow piece of paper. No funny business. And that is it's a beautiful time. It's a beautiful couple hours to spend your time. But I look around and I'm like, there's not a lot of Falcons people in East Tennessee. And I thought there'd be more when I moved up here years ago now. But a lot of Titans, a lot of Bills, a lot of Chiefs, a lot of Packers. And I'm over here just in my space and like guarding my TV and just really enjoying the whole endeavor where I did not emote a lot. And that was something that the first 2 weeks, I emoted a lot for the Rams and Saints finishes and what happened there. Very upset in the second half in both regards. This game was just, it was apparent to me that the Falcons were going to let Geno Smith do whatever he wanted to do, that the Seahawks were going to do whatever they wanted to do, and the Falcons were going to do whatever they wanted to do, and it might just be who gets the ball last, where I'm just jotting down my notes, and I'm like, oh, Cordero, another big run. Oh, Drake London wide open. Oh, Kyle Pitts wide open on a wheel route. Oh, another touchdown, and then, oh, Geno over the middle. Oh, they're trying Casey Hayward again. Oh, they're trying Casey Hayward again. Oh, they're trying Casey Hayward again. They figured it out, and that was that. And then the game really just came down to Grady Jarrett just being like, all right, I'm ending this because I am the best player on this defense. And then Richie Grant with the interception, Garrett's dude. But the Falcons get their first win of the season. Max, when you look back at this game, what jumped out to you? And were you surprised at how the Falcons beat the Seahawks on Sunday?
I would... zooming out, like my takeaway from the first three games is pretty simple. Like, the Atlanta Falcons have a coach. Like, Arthur Smith is legit. I feel like I'm the only one, not the only one. I just feel like that's been like a realization of mine that like this guy can coach offense. And like the fact that if you really step back and see what he's doing with this offense, it's pretty damn incredible. I mean, we're talking about Drake London, Kyle Pitts, and then seven scrap heap guys, including the quarterback, and and it's a top 10 offense in the NFL comfortably in like basically every metric you want. I mean, I don't think the Seattle game was actually all that different than the New Orleans game. The Rams game is a little different, but like the offense is really good. It's just straight up good, and I think it's really cool the way Arthur Smith has sort of adapted to the strengths and weaknesses that are there. Marcus Mariota is, I think he's running play action on 47% of his dropbacks, which is like unheard of. But that's what this team does well. That's what's going to, I think there's been a narrative about the offensive line too, where it's like the offensive line is much improved. I don't think that's true. I think that Arthur Smith is putting them in better positions to not have that be a weakness on the team. Playing a lot of heavy personnel, running a lot of play action, and playing to the strength of this team. And you just see how it's going to work once there are actual players in there. And that's all I wanted to see from this year. I wanted to come out of this year and say, Kyle Pitts a dude, Drake London's a dude, and we have a coach. And I don't see how you could watch the first three games and think otherwise.
Garrett, what do you think?
I completely agree. Across the board. No, Arthur Smith has been the most valuable player for this team. I mean, he has put this offense in position to succeed. I'm not going to restate everything that Max just said because he just hit the nail on the head. Like, it's the fact that it's an offense that's greater than the sum of its parts. And, I mean, what he's been able to do with Marcus Mariota, which Marcus Mariota has been fine. Like, I'm not going to go out and say he's been, like, some, like, he's rekindling the magic of what he did at Oregon or anything. And he's, like, finally, like, realizing that potential. No, I'm not really saying that. But he's been efficient, and he's in position to succeed. It's like, he's able to roll out of the pocket, be mobile, use his legs effectively, and take what the defense is giving him, just easy chunk play or easy chunk plays. Cordell Patterson's been a revelation. I mean, he's been fantastic. But I'm gonna look more at the defense. It's more the fact that they allowed Geno Smith to pretty much do what he wanted between the 20s. But then once they got in the red, they held true. They held strong for the most part. It was a bend but don't break. And considering the amount of talent that this defense has, I'm fine with that. Like, if you're able to do that, they were able to do that with LA in week two to some extent after, obviously, they dropped 28 points. So outside of that part, that part wasn't very pretty. But, I mean, they did New Orleans outside of the fact that they just melted down in the fourth quarter. But they finally put it all together for the most part against the Seahawks, and I think that was a good thing. They got the work cut out for them this week because, I mean, if you're allowing, 5 yards per carry to Rashad Penny, what the hell are you going to do against Nick Chubb? So it's going to be a very different type of test this week, a much better offense, even though, I mean, Jacoby Brissett is not Deshaun Watson. I mean, he's not really, but he can still burn you. He did it last week against the Steelers, or at least he did just enough. I mean, but he threw for 250 yards and two tutties. So he could do what he needs to do, and then when they put the ball in Nick Chubb's hand, anything can happen with him. So it's a different test for this defense, but they're getting after the quarterback. A.J. Terrell played better last week, and I was happy to see that. Casey Hayward's been up and down, but he has the interception. Richie Grant's looking better. But mostly that pass rush. Grady Jarrett's a stud, man. I love Grady Jarrett, man. He is just such a revelation for this defense.
He's unbelievable.
I love that guy.
Well, there should have been a couple picks in this one, too, because Rashawn Evans dropped one, maybe two. Did Rashawn Evans drop two picks in this game?
Richie Grant dropped like two or three.
Yeah. Geno,
it was enough to be like, okay, come on, Richie, let's go.
Right, and A.J. Terrell, I mean, he didn't go for the picks. He was just going for the deflections when he was matched up with DK a lot. Yes, yeah. So he was good. I think A.J. was good, especially with the matchup. Like, DK is kind of, I think, slept on, and, like, obviously the size differential between those two is massive. But they were like, oh, lock it on Casey Hayward. This is something that we like a lot, and they were pinpointing, and they were targeting Casey Hayward, who... You said up and down. I don't know. I think Casey Hayward's just quite bad. I don't know when the Georgia State Fair is here.
He hasn't been super great. I mean, but he's a veteran player. You know what you're going to get from him. He has the pick against Matthew Stafford. I mean, he's been awesome. But
it might be hitting a downhill on that career. But yeah. I think the defense is not good, and we should say that flat. But they're playing exactly how you'd want them to play given the talent level. It's an opportunistic defense, and like they're forcing turnovers, and they're blitzing a lot because they can't get pressure with four, and that's fine. And they have a few playmakers who are going to make, like Grady Jarrett is going to make 3 to 5 big plays every single game. And A.J. Terrell, I think, quelled a lot of any fears you had about him sort of getting bossed by Michael Thomas in week one. I'm not worried about A.J. Terrell in any capacity. But, like... There's nothing the defense is going to do that's going to make me change my opinion that much on, like, long term. Offensively, like, that's what I wanted to see this year. Is, like, are there signs that, like, long term, this is going to be one of the best offenses in the NFL when they get the players in? And I think we're seeing that. And so I'm not even that interested in the defense because I know it's not going to be very good. And I don't think this week sets up very well. Maybe we can talk about that. But, like, offensively, like, that's you can simulate the defensive possessions to me. Like, I just want to keep seeing this offense because it's pretty awesome.
Well, the best offense, or the best defense is a good offense, especially for this team.
Especially an offense that can run the ball.
Especially an offense that has Cordero Patterson, who has 300 rushing yards on the season and was the offensive player of the week last week. So you're able to do that against Cleveland, then you're going to be in the football game. And hell, if you're going to run for 150 yards with one guy, you're going to be in just about every football game you play. So, or at least you should be. You should be. But Arthur Smith has been a revelation. He gets a little snippy with the media, and it gets a little annoying, especially when you blow a 16-point lead in week one, and then you get snippy with the media afterwards. You don't really have that right to do that, but dude can coach some football. So I'll live with that. If we have to live with him being snippy with the media to do what he's doing right now with his offense, I'll take it.
I also think it changes, like, it a little bit changes my long-term outlook on the quarterback situation. Because I think we have evidence now that this can, under Arthur Smith, this can be a good offense without, like, an elite quarterback. And so I feel like if it comes down to it and you're not completely sold on, let's say you have the option of, you know, Stroud, Bryce Young, whoever you want, Will Levis, and Will Anderson, like, I don't think that they're going to be in a position this offseason where they need to take the quarterback. And I think that that's a really good position to be in. Like, I think you're just adding talent still. And this defense needs a ton of talent. But the offense is not far off. And, like, I can see this team being, like, a fringe wildcard team next year. Like, I can see how that happens. I see it in sort of the Lions' trajectory. And, like, that is – it's pretty clear to me.
Well, I mean, the NFC South is also not very good next year either, especially bad next year.
Yeah.
I'm assuming Tom Brady is not coming back. I don't know what Tampa is going to do.
Especially not the Tampa, yeah.
Yeah, so, and then New Orleans just looks terrible.
New Orleans
right
now.
Waste.
That team is bad.
It's not a good football team right now, and Carolina is much worse. So
they're going to fire Rule, yeah.
Look, at the end of the day, it's like you add a little bit more talent. You have $60 million to spend next year. No, screw a wild card. This team could win the NFC South next year. I'm just saying, it could.
I'm not completely like throwing that out as crazy.
That's also a year away. So
right, like, right. But
it's
like
so,
they're going
so
to,
much football left.
They're going to be aggressive in spending in this offseason. And I think, like, you kind of want to build around the timeline of a young quarterback if you're going to bring one in. But you can also build before and, like, build up an infrastructure and then have that infrastructure in place ready to go once you get the young quarterback in. Like, there's no – I don't think there's, like, a really bad outcome for what this offseason is going to be if you have the right infrastructure in place, which I think – also, we haven't talked about this, but Terry Fondo's drafts are looking a little bit better than I think the first one went. Let's just say that. Mm. You know, I think Richie Grant is a player. I think he's going to be a starter here long term. I think Drew Dahlman might be a starter here long term. I think Arnold Nabuchetti's shown you enough to believe he's here. I think Drake London is a clear hit already. Kyle Pitts is Kyle Pitts.
Troy Anderson's been pretty solid too.
Yeah, and I think that was what I was worried about. I was a little worried after that first draft, you know, the Jalen Mayfield and how's Richie Grant look, and I think there is pretty clear evidence now, and with the way that they've clearly shown to evaluate cheap talent, Cordarrelle Patterson being the prime example, I think that they've given us enough to believe in this GM-coach duo for the long term.
I think it's still going to come down to, I mean, the NFC South, like you guys said, I think the Saints are headed towards a rebuild, whether they want to or not. I think they're kind of being pushed in that way. The Panthers are definitely in that zone where they're rebuilding with the new coach and where they're going. But the Bucks, I would still, like, even if Brady's not a Buck next year, like, I'm just going to go ahead and assume they're going to get some other big name quarterback to just take the place because this is a win now roster. and I would assume an unhappy veteran that might want to go elsewhere from a team that just blew it up or something like that, then that's an option, and that's a very very good option, because the defense has carried Tampa through 3 weeks, and the offense hasn't really been good at all. They're like having to bring in Cole Beasley to get important reps because Julio Jones not healthy. Who would have thought in 2022 that was going to be a risky proposition to count on Julio, who, look, maybe the second best Falcon of all time, but it's just over. The reliability with him is gone. Russell Gage, though, was targeted a bunch. Miss Russell Gage in this offense, I will say. But the elephant in the room is like Marcus Mariota, where he had another bad fumble on an RPO in this game, where he held it and then dropped it, and that could have been a rough one. He had the pick at the end of the first half that Arthur Smith took responsibility for with just the play call, and he's like, I got a little too I forgot the way he a little too cute or something.
Too cute, I think. Yeah. Which is a funny way of saying that they need to protect themselves from their quarterback a little bit, you know?
Yes. And the weird thing about Mariota, which I think has been the most pleasant surprise about him, is that he goes downfield, and he has not been afraid to take deep shots. And I mean, the first play of the game, and you'll never convince me otherwise, was a shot at Falcons media. Like, there is no doubt 100%. In my mind. You call Kyle Pitts on just a seam route straight up the field, like that. Like, there's no doubt that whole first drive. I don't have that sheet in front of me, but it was just like four targets for Kyle Pitts. And you're telling me that was not, you just love the matchup this week. Like, come on, man. Like, that is absolutely like, hey, Kyle's not feeling great about the current workload that you're giving him. But also, Kyle Pitts wheel route should be on every single drive. Like, a Kyle Pitts wheel route should be included. I don't care what the context is. If you put a linebacker on Kyle Pitts out of the backfield, he is going to get open.
And well, Chase, do you remember the outcome of that first drive, by the way, where they target him as many mm-hmm. times?
Yeah.
They scored a touchdown.
Right. That was nice. That was nice.
I think first of all, I'm not fully on the, like, the way that the media talks about the Kyle Pitts, Arthur Smith offense is so weird to me, because the offense is so much better than anyone predicted. And so, like, if the outcome of the offense is really good, why are you like nit? Because it's because of fantasy football, first of all.
Well,
but like,
I get
like usage. Like, you want to be using Kyle Pitts because obvious reasons. I get that in like the macro sense. But like, why are we making Arthur Smith out to be some idiot? Like, because he, you know, there were a couple games where Kyle Pitts had lower targets. If the offense is overperforming expectation, like, I don't. It's just kind of a dumb way to look at it. But
it's just because they lost. That's it. I mean, so the point is,
they didn't lose because of the offense. Like,
no, I wouldn't say they necessarily did, but it's like, if you target your best player, then I think that would help a little bit. I mean, that's just where the minds went. And it's just as much that they just asked him, hey, what are – it was an innocuous question that spurred all of this. It was it was not like a targeted thing. It was the fact that someone's like, hey, yeah, you didn't really target – Kyle Pitts today. Was like, what was up with that?
And then he hates freaked that out. Stuff. He hates that stuff.
Freaked out. And then, so it's like, all right, cool. This is now, you've now created a talking point. He did it himself. It wasn't the media. They asked him an innocuous question and he freaked out. So
he does love to do that.
He loves
but like,
that.
I don't know. Whatever.
It's like fantasy football. It's like, okay, dude.
And it's like you said, the macro sense is, I think, the bigger issue, where it's like, okay, we get the offense is good without Kyle Pitts being targeted a plethora of them. Times, but it's, if you go through the top 10 tight ends PFF grades, they're all like the usual suspects, right? And those teams are all good. The Niners, the Chiefs, the Eagles, you go up and down the list, they are prioritizing this unique Swiss Army knife. Like, it's just one of those things where if you draft this player at this point, you better be using him. And it's not like you said, the offense has been the problem, but like, the first half against Los Angeles was not great. It wasn't like the offense was cooking with fire there in the first half, and it wasn't like the offense was great in the second half against the Saints. Like, there are drives. I mean, we saw that a little bit in the second half against the Seahawks, where the offense was not the same, and Drake London did a lot to kind of bail this team out in the second half. And Cordero with some big runs that just kind of changed the game a little bit. But I don't know, I think it's going to be interesting to see with Mariota too, Garrett, is just that, like, when you look at what you've seen from him through 3 weeks, is it thumbs up, thumbs down for the full season if he's healthy? Or have you seen just enough where it's like, I think we can just put Ritter in and just be just as fine and just see what we have there? I don't know.
No. Ritter's not going to be the guy yet. I mean, I have not seen any reason. This isn't like Trubisky in Pittsburgh. Like, I feel completely different than I would about what I would end up there. Ritter is not ready. If he was ready, he'd be playing. I feel very strongly about that part specifically. But the other thing is Marcus Mariota's been good. Like, that's the thing. Like, he's shown us that he's the guy, not necessarily that number two overall pick, but he has a talent. He's very talented. He's fast. He's efficient with the football, and he's accurate. It's just that every now and then he makes these boneheaded mistakes, and I think some of that had a lot to do with the fact that he just hadn't started at the quarterback position for 2 years, two and a half years, really. I mean, that has a lot to do with it. Like, week one, when he had that fumble against the Saints, I think that if he has more experience, like, under center, like, recent experience, he doesn't fumble that football. Because he fumbled it specifically because he didn't know where the down and distance was. You got to do that. It's a veteran quarterback. You cannot make a mistake like that. You just can't. The other mistake he made is he saw the exact play that he wanted, the exact formation that he wanted out of the Saints defense, and he got too excited and he dropped the football. You can't do that as a veteran. But a lot of those things I'm just going to attribute to the fact that he hadn't played in a while, and it's just experience. And he has more than made up for that with the fact that this Falcons offense, like Max has said numerous times, it's far better than expected. And it's playing a lot better, a lot greater than the sum of its parts, which I've said about the defense too. I mean, it's like they're playing better than expected. And I think a lot of that has to do with Marcus Mariota.
What do you think, Max?
Yeah, I think everything Garrett said I agree with. And I also think, like, planning out, I've seen people sort of trying to plan out, like, well, if things go like this, when does Ritter get a chance? And, like, you have to know what Ritter is before the end of the year, and, like, all this sort of, and I get all that, and we've talked about all that, but I also don't think you need to know the answer to that question in week four. First of all, my prediction continues to be, and has always been, that Marcus Mariota is going to get hurt at some point. And that might answer your question for you. I mean, just by the nature of how he's playing, his lack of reps over the last few years, and just, like, his history, leads you to believe that at some point he is more likely to get hurt than the average quarterback. And if that's the case, then yeah, we'll see Ritter. Otherwise, we don't have to, like, really think about this until, you know, week eight, week nine, especially if they win more games than we thought. Like, if they go out there and they're 4-4 or whatever in week eight, like, you're not talking about, like, replacing the quarterback if he's playing like this. And so priority number one is to stay competitive. You know, I'm not really focused on wins and losses right now, but, like, they could easily be 2-1, if not 3-0 right now. And if they were, this conversation would be drastically different. Like, they would be at top of division, and we'd be talking about, could this be, like, the most improbable Falcons playoff run in our lifetimes? It's like, kind of a moot point, and I don't think that's going to happen. And, you know, they're probably going to fall off at some point, and they're pretty thin. But I just think, like, the Ritter conversation is not that interesting to me right now because of the way the offense is playing.
Because Marcus Mariota is playing good football too. It's like,
yeah, totally.
He's doing what he needs to do. Like, if he was going out there making boneheaded mistakes after boneheaded mistake, and the offense is sputtering and they're not able to get any drives going, that's just not happening. It's not happening. And as long as the offense is looking better and being effective, it's like he may still not be the guy. Like, this could still be a really good offense. But this could also be like an Alex Smith-led offense where it's like you're seeing what you have, you're seeing the needs that you still have, you can address those needs, and then you plug and play with a quarterback, and you just explode. There are things that have, like, offenses that have done that before, and it's worked great. I mean, that's what the Cleveland Browns are expecting to happen later this season. It's like you go get that guy, and then that's the last piece that you need. Sometimes it works. Some people start with the quarterback, some people finish with the quarterback. But both can turn into Super Bowls.
Mm-hmm. And I also think, like, you need to evaluate Ritter, but you also need to evaluate Pitts. You also need to evaluate London. Yeah. You need to evaluate your offensive line. And if Mariota's the one putting all those pieces in the best place to succeed, then
he's got
to
be
more valuable evaluation. Yeah. You know,
that's fair. Max, the biggest area of strength for this Falcons team that you've been surprised about through 3 weeks is who?
I would say surprise. Why? I mean, I know I said that Arthur Smith's putting the offensive line in good positions, but like, I think they've been eminently competent in pass pro in a way that, like, I mean, it does make me think that a lot of what was holding back the offense last year was that Matt Ryan wasn't a great fit at this point in his career for what Arthur Smith wanted to do in terms of getting the quarterback on the move and sort of protecting his offensive line. And so I don't know how many answers the offensive line is giving you, but I am surprised that it's not like an Achilles heel of this offense. I think like Cordarrelle Patterson will never not surprise me. And I mean, another one, I think Drake London, like, being a legitimate wide receiver one immediately, having played basically no preseason, and just looking awesome. I would say that 100% surprises me. And I thought Drake London was going to be really good. I didn't think he was going to be this good this quick.
What about you, Garrett?
I love Drake London. I got really excited. So I remember doing a lot of the draft prep specifically for Drake London, and we had a lot of NFL guys come on, like a lot of scouts, talking about how he was like a legitimate guy. And I remember at first, I remember telling myself, I was like, who's this guy? He can't run 40, he's been injured, blah, 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 blah. Then I actually started like looking into a lot of his stuff, and like, the dude was a stud, and he has shown that he is the exact same guy that he was in college, just a super dynamic, incredible player. But I guess the thing that surprised—I don't want to say it surprised, well, it surprised me. But if like before the season, if I told you that the Falcons were top half of the NFL in sacks, what would you say?
I would be surprised.
That's pretty surprising. They're top half of the NFL in sacks, so.
I think it's less sacks check. For me. It'd be more like pressure rate.
I love
rate.
It. I'll take that.
I care less
how many
about
of those
sacks
came
more
in
about
the
pressure
first
rate.
Half of the Saints game, though?
I was thinking
probably,
that, too.
Probably well,
75%. Yeah.
Because I don't think they had, out before the Grady sack on Geno, that was the first sack of the game, right?
They have team sacks.
Yeah. How many of those came
they're
in
still
the
a little
game?
Ways below like the Dallas Cowboys, who have like double that.
I care more about the pressure rate, where Graham and Rush and company, when Grady can't get home, there's just nothing. Like Lorenzo Carter, I think, now that I remember, I think he had a sack in this game.
He's trying to fill a narrative here.
It's fine. I'm trying to fill something. We have the same amount as the Cleveland Browns, the Cincinnati Bengals, the Green Bay Packers, the Tennessee Titans, the LA Rams.
I just need you to pull up pressure rate, and like that's what I think it's a better stat. Pressure rate is.
Admittedly, I do not know what the pressure rate. It's more just the fact that they're getting home in a way that they were never able to get home. And at the end of the day, it's like a pressure is pretty awesome, and I love a pressure, and a pressure affects a play.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, it's like if you can't have 18 team sacks like you did last year.
Like Geno could just make himself a nice little meal in the backfield on Sunday. He could just have a nice little picnic as he's stepping back to pass. For most of Sunday. I'm not falling to this narrative. Look, I am feeling good about where the Falcons are right now.
Get on the train, Chase.
I draw the line at the Falcons have a sneaky good pass rush. Can't do it.
No, I didn't say anything about whether they were good or bad. Mm-hmm. I said that they were in the top half of the NFL in sack total.
That's all I said.
You can draw whatever narrative you want to draw out of it.
It's like the whole Aiden Hutchinson, like his 3-sack game a couple weeks ago, where if you look at his sacks, it's just wide open, and he really...
Oh, you look at... it's like looking at the Vic Beasley sacks in 2016.
Whoa. That's a drive-by on Aiden Hutchinson. Come on, he's good.
It's just important. He hasn't been good. Aiden Hutchinson might just
be
bad.
He is good. No, my God. What
the hell is going on? I haven't watched any minute. Not a minute of...
Aiden Hutchinson good at football.
I think what you do...
Oh, I don't think... He's a good football player. But no,
I think what you always...
But it's like Vic Beasley had... 15 and a half sacks in 2016 and 17 pressures.
I've always said that Vic Beasley and Aiden Hutchinson were one and the same when they were coming into the league. So
I didn't compare Aiden Hutchinson to Vic Beasley. I just said the pressure rate.
What have I got myself into here? Rate.
I think it was also just like the question of do they actually want to be great, I think was the same when it came to Aiden and Vic. Just you had that question about whether or not they really wanted it. The Braves.
He's just needling.
Man, that was tough.
The Braves, they have a great big series. Max Fried tonight versus DeGrom in Atlanta. We were wondering if it was going to be in Atlanta a couple days ago and what the status was going to be, but thankfully there will not be any crazy hurricane damage coming Atlanta's way. Thoughts and prayers to the good folks over there in Fort Myers, because it just got destroyed. Like, it's just looking at the before and after photos are it's just awful. But the Braves are hosting the Mets basically for the division. Winner take all. The loser gets the wild card game with the Padres, most likely, where the Padres, if y'all did not know, have a better record on the road than at home this season, which is not great. I don't want any part of the Padres in a wild card round, if that's where the Braves fall. But if you win the division, not only do you win the division, you get a bye. And it is, it's just such a huge series, and it's just going to, I'm already tensing up just thinking about sitting through these games over the weekend. Garrett, when you look at Braves-Mets this weekend, your eyes will be on what storyline?
Yeah, there are a lot. I mean, look, ultimately, the Braves are in a bad situation. They're not good. I know they're playing at home, and I know that they play very well at home. They play good at night. They don't play well during the day. They don't have to play during the day. That's nice. But we're also looking at a series where they essentially need a sweep. Like, they need a sweep because they need to be, I think it's like two, they have to be two games better than the Mets. And then the Mets are going to Washington to finish out their season. They're not losing any of those three games. I would be shocked if they lose any of those three games. The Braves are going to the Marlins. I'd be a little bit more surprised if I wouldn't say any more or less surprised. I mean, the Braves could lose a game to the Marlins, but the Marlins, because they have Sandy Alcantara who's pitching, that's the only reason that I could see them potentially losing one of those games. But look, the point is the Braves need a sweep against the Mets, and the Mets have shown once or twice that they can get swept. I just, not with Scherzer and DeGrom pitching in back-to-back nights, and that's going to be extremely difficult. But look, I people have doubted the Braves before. I think that they can come out and get it done. It's the odds are so stacked against them this weekend. And just in terms of, you're facing two of the best pitchers in baseball, and you're also down without one of your best pitchers, Spencer Strider. He's not going to be pitching. He's on the injured list until the last game of the regular season, which is a huge blow to this team. In general, like, this team is slumping a little bit right now on offense. Austin Riley's not playing good baseball. Matt Olson's hopefully turning things around a little bit after his off day last week. This is going to be a difficult series. But the Mets have never been in a situation like this. Most of the guys on this roster haven't even sniffed the playoffs. Braves are still defending World Series champions. They know what it's like to be in these situations where they're playing from behind, or maybe they're playing with everything to lose. And I think that the Braves are going to be benefactors of that experience, and I want to see what the Mets do when they actually are faced with a little bit of pressure. I don't think they've really been faced with all that much pressure this season, outside of the looming threat of the Atlanta Braves coming in and hot on their trail. And I think that matters to some extent, but they still got their work cut out for them. It's going to be a very tough weekend, and I'm going to be following most of these games on my phone because we have a show tomorrow night at the same time as the game, and then tonight I've got high school football, and then I'm a nervous wreck just thinking about it. But if they drop the first game of this series, you can pretty much kiss the division goodbye.
What do you think, Max?
Yeah, I mean, it's playoff baseball before playoff baseball, right? So I mean, it's like it is a lot of pressure to put on that first game in the series too. But I like what Garrett said. Like, if you get that first game, suddenly that pressure kind of flips. And yeah, they probably need a sweep. Two out of three is not likely, but I mean, it keeps you in it. And obviously, if you lose a series, get ready for the wild card game. Like, that's kind of it. And it's just horrible. I mean, this team could win 100 games and have to play its way into the playoffs entirely. And I was pro, still am pro, the playoff system. But God, it's just like a, it's just a brutal thing to play 162 games, win 100 of them, and then have your season come down to one game.
Well, it's 3 games now.
Yeah, sorry. But even that, it's like, I don't know. It just feels like getting that bye is monumental. And I don't know. I think Garrett was right about the Braves slumping. But I do think it's almost like turning the page to a new season this weekend. And it's almost like you're starting the playoffs now. And that oddly gives me some degree of comfort. Coming home, just start the playoffs right now. Let's go play one night at a time. And I think you got to have faith in the Braves even sort of blindly after the last few years. And I think all it takes is to flip the switch and get hot again, and they could make a run. I have no doubt.
Yeah, I think they can definitely do that this weekend. But, I mean, the importance of winning the division, not even just for bragging rights. I mean, bragging rights are fine. And I'd love to have that over the Mets. Don't get me wrong. But the health of this team, they need some days off. Because they've been playing this sort of breakneck pace for 3 months now. And most of these guys, I mean, like, you look at the top five, top 10 players in innings played. The majority of these players, if you look at the contenders, they're all Braves. All of them are Braves. And you started to see that a little, like, reflect itself a little bit. Dansby Swanson's slumping a little bit. He's got an 85 WRC plus or something over the past month or so. Matt Olson's slumping. Austin Riley. And I think that some of that has to do with the fact that they've just played so many innings. And it happens. Like, it's just like you get tired. Spencer Strider has the oblique injuries. Max Fried. I mean, like, you don't want your best pitchers pitching in this wildcard series and then immediately having to flip around and then you're, what, starting Bryce Elder in game one or two of the NLDS against the Dodgers? No, thank you. I would very much prefer not to do that. And that is the situation that they're in right now. You have to win the division because you need those 4 or 5 days because that's enough time to get Spencer Strider back and healthy. You can give him one spot start against the Marlins at the end of the season. Lock it all down. See what he can do. Get him like 4 innings and then get him out of there. And then that is so important because then he gets a four or five days to rest and then he gets right back into his normal rotation. You can throw him in against probably the St. Louis Cardinals. And I think that matters a great deal. And so it's less important for the Mets because I hate the Mets and I want them to lose. But no, look, but it's critically important for the Braves, in my opinion, because this team just needs to get healthy and it needs to get right. And it's just a tough get-right game against the San Diego Padres, who that's what it's looking like. And the Padres are a really damn good team. Like, Juan Soto hasn't played nearly as well as advertised, but he's still Juan Soto. And he still turned on what he did, what was that, back in 2017 when they went and won the World Series? He's fully capable of turning into Ted Williams for a month.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I don't want to be the victim of that.
Yeah, I'm not worried about that part of it. You're asking a lot of this team to do in success and to do in succession, which is the run that they had last year, where they were not the best team in baseball, but it doesn't matter. Come November, but it's just to beat the Padres and then beat the Dodgers and then beat the Cardinals and then beat the Astros or Yankees. It's not realistic. I'm just not there. So you need the bye. You need to limit the damage and how much you have to go through to get back to where you want to be. And I think this weekend series is huge. The walk-off against Washington was brutal on Wednesday night. That felt like a nail in the coffin type thing for me, where now you're putting so much pressure in the Mets are calling up their top prospect for this weekend, which I very much love. Like, that's a cool thing for this weekend. Just another wrinkle to this rivalry, and we'll see what happens there. But I don't know. I mean, Michael Harris, he started at number 9, and he's just one of the Braves' most important hitters right now.
They got him in the 4 spot. And yeah. I love that.
I mean, it's crazy, though, that we're here. Like, it is... Yeah, but if Austin Riley's hitting like this going in the postseason, they don't really have a chance anyway. Like, he has to figure it out.
If you don't have Austin Riley, Matt Olson, or Dansby Swanson hitting where they need to be hitting, then
you're toast.
But it's almost
you're
like done. It's almost
you're
like
not going to get you're not you're you have no chance against.
You need those things to happen in order to get in, and you need those things like it's a, you know, if they don't happen, you don't get in, and if they like and if you don't get it, like, obviously, like, you need them to get hot in order to make a run, right?
Sure.
But you also need to get hot to get in. So either those things will happen or they won't.
This is also the best team in baseball since the All-Star break. So I'm not going to point to that Nationals game necessarily for the reason that they may not win this division. I'm going to point to the fact that they were 10.5 games back on June 1st. The thing is, this is the same conversation that we had about the Atlanta Hawks this year. Not that they played lackadaisical basketball or baseball in this case at the first part of the season. There was a serious hangover from the World Series last year. And there is no reason that they were 10 games below 500 and 10.5 games, upwards of 10.5, 12, 13 games back in the National League East. And now that they're like, oh yeah, let's just go win the division. Just the fact that they're even in position right now is just credit to how hot this team has been. And I mean, some fans, like Mets fans on Twitter, will point to the fact that they just played bad baseball teams. Well, no, you don't play bad baseball teams over the course of a 162-game season and win 100 baseball games. Like, you don't do that. That's just not what it is. Like, this is a really good team, and this is a really hot baseball team. You just – they're paying for their – they're just reaping what they sowed back in April.
Is Michael Harris from Atlanta?
Yes.
So we're staying to Stockbridge's Atlanta? Okay. That was just a broader question. I saw Anscape by Clinton Yates wrote a piece on Michael Harris today and referred to Stockbridge as Atlanta. And I was like,
Metro Atlanta.
It's all Atlanta.
Like, I'm not from Atlanta. I'm from Stone Mountain. He's from Stockbridge.
Metro Atlanta.
I feel like I'm closer, so that means I'm Atlanta if he's Stockbridge, because Stockbridge is a little bit of a drive to downtown Atlanta. It's a little bit of a way.
Metro kids, Max. What are you talking about here?
Hold on. I was going to say, like, y'all really are from Atlanta.
OTP, folks.
I'm
literally OTP. Atlanta.
See, that's
literally Atlanta.
I don't even count, like, Roswell as Atlanta.
I would agree.
Roswell's OTP. OTP is not Atlanta, technically. So Atlanta proper.
Yeah.
But he's Braves.
But I'm like a snob about that. So.
Oh no, I'm a massive snob.
I'm a snob too, as an OTP guy, where I
respect that.
I hear people say, you don't see that very often.
No,
you're from Roswell. You're not from Atlanta. Like, you're from Milton. You're not from Atlanta. You're from Forsyth, not Atlanta.
My favorite
was
getting corrected when I went to college. People would correct me when I told them that I was from Atlanta. They're like, "Where are you really from?" And I'm like, "I'm from Atlanta."
Yeah, like literally ITP.
The area code. What are we doing?
Max is like, yeah, y'all are right in there, Matt. There's nothing more Atlanta than Padilla. Like, Padilla is just
right on Ponce.
Yeah,
there's nothing.
That's
Atlanta.
That's no question.
Heart and soul.
What are they? The Pythons? Did you reveal that a couple weeks ago?
Paladins.
Yeah, Pythons. No,
see, I
no,
thought they were
no,
Paladins
not
too.
Paladins.
Yeah. It sounds Paladin. It's a kind of
as a non secular school. Paladins was not on the table. if you don't know what a Paladin is, look it up.
Didn't really work. Pythons though, secular friendly. One thing before we go, real quick. The closing five on opening night for the Hawks will be who, Max?
The closing five on opening night for the Hawks will be Trae Young,
mm-hmm.
DeJounte Murray, DeAndre Hunter if he's healthy, John Collins, Clint Capella.
Okay.
Is that controversial? That's
okay.
The five.
Interesting. Okay. What do you think, Garrett?
What's the situation? I mean, it's like, yeah, what he said. I can't disagree. That's going to be the starting five.
I don't really know.
I don't think
he
closes that way.
I don't know. I don't really know where. I mean, you could maybe make the case that you can make the case that Collins isn't in it.
Yeah, that's the only one that I was going
to
say.
And you slide John
Murray's
going
to be playing. Trey has to be playing.
And Bogey at the three if you're trying to go small. But like, I don't see that.
That's really small.
The best lineup, I think, and I'm putting this on the record on September 30th. I think the best record or the best plus minus of any five man unit is Trey, DeJounte, Bogey, Hunter, and Collins. And I will not be surprised if that's
Kaminsky.
What they close.
Who is that lineup guarding?
It doesn't matter. I don't know how you stop
it. I mean,
it
does matter.
No,
it
you
does.
You have DeJounte,
matter.
You have DeAndre Hunter, and you have Collins. You'll see what happens.
I don't want to see that lineup try to guard anybody. I mean, that is the disaster. I think Bogey is going to enter can't really guard anybody territory this year, and I'm a little worried about that.
Bogey?
Yeah. I mean, you go from can't stay healthy territory to can't guard anybody territory.
Do you know they help? Do you know who they open with?
Miami?
Milwaukee.
Cool.
Oh, never mind. That's the preseason. First regular season game. Yeah, sorry. That's preseason.
At least we'll be on television.
First regular season is Houston.
Yeah, it is Houston, and then it's Orlando. Like that.
Let's ease into things.
Capella's not start. You don't need to play Capella against Houston late. Houston might be going
sanguine
at the five.
He's going to be.
I don't think so.
Y'all ready for NBA action? I am so excited.
I am very excited.
I'm honestly not ready. I'm not ready.
I'm not even remotely ready. So my co-host at Dopey the Millennials, he's our reporter for the Atlanta Hawks. He was over at the Hawks media day. I didn't even know it was happening, and he's just tweeting about it. I'm like, oh God, it's back! Like, this is here. Like, I'm still in baseball mode, and football is already like just overwhelmed my life.
Did we read the Schultz article about Trey and McMillan?
No.
Read it.
Good or bad?
Read it. It's interesting. They admitted that they had some communication issues last year, and McMillan went out and visited him in the off season, and they spent 2 days together. Read it. It was interesting. Schultz.
I mean, great. Nate's not keeping this job for the full year. Like, it's
great.
Chill.
They kind of came to the consensus that Trey needs to be more of a communicator, more of a leader, and like, I kind of agree.
He's being paid $37 million.
How many coaches have had that conversation with James Harden, Ben Simmons,
Kevin
Durant? I don't
think Trey Young is James Harden or Ben Simmons though. Like, his personality is not like that. He's just kind of quiet.
Trey's not a leader. That's not his MO.
You know who's a leader?
John
Collins. DeJounte Murray.
Oh.
John Collins.
I was going to say, it's John Collins is the leader of this team. Maybe Onyeka Okongwu, we don't know enough about him. I hope he is. I hope he has that in him. Trey's not a leader.
Are we ever going to see that next step for Onyeka Okongwu? I heard he was hitting, he was just dumping threes in the practice.
The answer is yes.
Well, also, I'll tell you, Garrett, as someone who's watched a lot of practice NBA players, bigs especially, shoot threes wide open, it's unbelievable how good they really are.
Oh, no. I've seen that.
They're
sinking them.
Like Dwight Howard, I remember watching one time.
No, Andre Drummond. Andre Drummond got called out by a kid at a camp or something, and he's like, yeah, you can't shoot threes. It's whatever. And then he just goes out there and just goes, bang, 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 three-pointers. And he's like, no, it's not that shooting a three-pointer in an NBA game is completely different.
Yes.
It's completely.
They can all shoot threes.
They can shoot everything. They're not human. They're freaks. I fully believe that an NBA player is more freakish than any other sport, period.
Yeah.
You put Steph Curry next to Myles Garrett, and they're the same size. You seen that picture?
I don't know. That's,
what?
No, like height-wise, they're the same height.
They're not the same size, though.
Not like arm-wise, but it's
Myles
like...
Myles Garrett
they're the same.
Like, no.
Hold on, no.
Myles
Steph
Garrett
Curry.
Is like...
This is a take right here.
Steph Curry.
Next to...
Do you want me to just edit this part out, Garrett?
That is one of the weirder things I've ever heard.
Steph Curry and
Miles... They're the exact same height.
Height.
I'm talking weight.
He's like a small fry. Like he's a small end. That's what I'm saying. And Miles Garrett's a freak.
And also, let me be clear. I'm not criticizing Trey with the leadership stuff. I don't...
Back to the actual point. Sorry.
Well, I don't... I'm not taking a shot at him for that. Like, Trey is who he is. I think at this point, it's the same thing with him being off ball.
About that in the article too, by the way.
Yeah, and it's great. You can talk about this in the off season. Like, it's so much easier when Trey is just hanging out in Oklahoma and just living
but
his
like,
best
life. The options are like they talk about it and it's a thing, or they don't talk about it and it's not a thing. And the better of those two options is that they talk about it and at least say they're going to do it.
Yeah. I just have
it doesn't mean a lot, but it means something.
I should say. Like, I just don't think that's who Trey is, and that's why I've always been so fearful of moving John, is just John is that dude. John is the linchpin, I think, of keeping them competitive, and just you want him in a playoff series, like going to war. I think he was a big, big part of their run. And, I mean, not just because of the poster on Embiid and everything. I will be surprised if Capella ultimately is the closing five and they go big like with Collins and Capella late. But I also am just so fascinated to see Trey off ball and how much I'm just going to be following a red line of Trey's body language when he's trailing on the side and seeing what he's doing when he doesn't have the ball in his hands for a stretch of possessions. It's going to be fascinating. I'm hoping it great things. I just think people who pencil it in are like, all right, we'll see. Garrett Chapman, W Millennials this weekend, college football game time, all kinds of stuff. You're,
high school scoreboard show tonight. Falcons fly over tomorrow.
There you go. Max Markovich, anything new with you?
This photo of Steph Curry and Myles Garrett is so distorted that it drives me nuts. That is the worst thing. Whatever. Michigan, Iowa, J.J. McCarthy's coming out party. Michigan
over under 45 points.
Under.
Probably under, but Iowa can't. Like, that's because Iowa cannot. Iowa's one of the worst offenses I've ever seen.
No, it's terrible. Their defense over, is spectacular.
I think we win like 24-10.
Ooh.
I think it's like 17.
I'd say 20. Like 21.
Iowa's got like a
40%
chance of winning this game.
I think Iowa
Don't
look
good against Maryland.
No, come on. You're on the road in Iowa.
End this podcast.
Well, that's what happens when you play UConn and then you go on the road to play Hawaii and take your vacation.
Not everyone can be the Tennessee Volunteers.
The Hawaii game was at home. Let's correct the record.
Was UConn on the road, though? A true
UConn
road
was
test.
Also at home.
Last I saw UMass? UConn, they were trying
Colorado
out a defensive
State
tackle.
Also at home.
Is Hawaii. It actually is this
the
game
college
in
football
Iowa, play- or is it in the Big
Ten? Yes, it's in Iowa. Yeah,
it's in Iowa.
The college football playoff era. Yeah, it's in Kinnick, whatever.
Ooh.
I'm not worried. I'm not nervous. You're nervous.
He's so full of it, Garrett. This man already ready. He's so angry about
it. I'm not scared. You're though. Scared. I can see that. Cade McNamara's hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Don't give me that. He's out.
JJ McCarthy.
Done. JJ.
Can Blake Corum just run for 400 plus yards in 2 weeks?
Probably. Probably. Okay. He's like the best college running back in college football.
Mm. I care more about our 27-year-old Heisman candidate quarterback, Hendon Hooker, who gets better every week. 46 TDs, 2 picks.
Future Atlanta Falcon, Hendon Hooker.
No, but that'd be awesome. No, who I want on the Falcons is Cedric Tillman. He's big, long. It's a very Arthur Smith type guy. Just keep drafting.
Braylon Edwards ain't the guy, so we'll see.
Braylon Edwards, that's the name I've not heard in a long time. For that guy up there in Atlanta, Georgia, for that other guy up there in Atlanta, Georgia, Max Markovich, for myself up here in Knoxville, Tennessee. That is all we've got here on the Atlanta Sports Guys. We'll be back next week, hopefully with a 500 Atlanta Falcons and a Braves team that won the NL East, but we shall see. Max, Garrett, I will talk to y'all next week. All right, hello, and welcome back to Go Big Orange Friday here on the Chase Thomas Podcast, where I'm still the aforementioned Chase Thomas coming to you live from Knoxville, Tennessee. Also here with me in Knoxville, Tennessee, that guy, my good friend over there in another part unknown in Knoxville, Tennessee, Ethan Stone, upstairs down south. Powell. Okay, he is in Powell. I thought you were in Powell, but I wasn't 100% certain. I was like hesitating. I was like, he moved recently and I didn't know how close he moved. And I had to think about it for a second. But hey, Ethan, how are you?
I'm doing well. Yeah, I'm coming to you live from Powell, Tennessee. Beautiful, kind of North Knoxville-ish in that area. But yeah, I'm doing great.
There you go. Fantastic. Hey man, Powell, we're pro Powell on this podcast. They have a great Kroger in Powell. They have a Buffalo Wild Wings that's always bumping. Like for whatever reason,
there's about I'd say 10 Weigels as well. Mm-hmm. Can't go wrong with that.
They closed my favorite restaurant though in Powell. The Front Porch was this Southern style cooking over there. Like,
oh my
on
gosh,
the corner.
They closed that?
You know what I'm talking about? Yes, they closed.
I had no idea. I love that place too. That's incredible.
It's so good. And it's I think in the past, like their steak tips. Oh my god. Like that place was top notch.
I'm legitimately sad. I did not know that. I'm hearing it for the first time. That's so sad.
It's even worse because we drove up. My dad was up one weekend, and that was like our thing. He was like, we were like, yeah, we'll just meet halfway at Powell because they have a farm in Oak Ridge now, and it was heartbreaking to pull up. I was like, this is weird. Friday night, there's no cars in the crazy gravel lot over there. This is a bad sign. And then it was like they closed like that day before. But yeah, it was like a family reason or something. I don't know. They never really watched. Yeah.
That's terrible.
Bring it back. Someone's got to step up here.
Let's get some good news going here.
I know. It was rough. I'm glad you liked it too, because I feel like I would talk to people about it. And they're like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And I'm like, you're the problem. You're why this doesn't exist anymore. Food was so good. Oh my God, I love good Southern homestyle cooking. But yeah, also Oak Ridge at Powell tonight.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Are you tailgating, or what's your, like, how's the rest of your afternoon looking? Is traffic already starting to back up a little bit, Ethan?
No, not particularly. I don't know. I can look out. Emery's right over there, so I can look out and monitor the situation over here. But
well, you're in my stomping grounds. Like, I do a lot of my work. If you see me out in the wild, I'm either on campus or I'm at Mahalo. Like, those are basically the two places I'm usually at. But not as many places anymore because I broke my foot, 2 weeks ago now. So, just hopping around, Googling if I'm going to get DVT multiple times a day based on how much I move my foot. So that's been fun, as a, longtime hypochondriac. It's been a wild ride, Ethan.
Yeah, I bet.
I've never broken a bone. Never broken a bone. Have you?
I have not. I have like slightly fractured my heel when I was like 5 years old. I don't count that.
That sounds awful. I didn't know you could do that.
I jumped into a swimming pool that was 2 feet deep and I thought it was 5 feet deep. Now, keep in mind, I was 5 years old. So like, you know, I was a little idiot, but jumped right in and it fractured my heel. That's the closest I've gotten to breaking a bone.
Oh, that's rough, man. But you know what's not rough? The Tennessee Volunteers being 4-0 through September. Ethan, one of us on this podcast said 10-2. One of us between you, Ryan, and myself was like, I only see like the breakthrough, the 10-2 type season, or things go to hell, injuries pile up, and this team goes back a little bit and fan base gets panicky at 6-6 or 7-5. They're on their way to 10-2, Ethan. And I said, it always happens faster than you would think in year two for a lot of these coaches now. Lane Kiffin wins 10 games in year two at Ole Miss. I remember I was doing some deep dives into just different programs around the country and like what year two looked like the last couple of years. And it's just always a bigger jump than you think. And in basically, you know, if a coach is going to work now with the portal and everything else by year two. And they got through Florida, they get through Pitt, and you know what's funny? Going into this bye and next week and Tillman getting the Tua surgery on his ankle this week, and also prayers and shout out to Tua, who should not have been playing football last night.
That was terrifying. That was genuinely terrifying. But
awful, awful. And also, Amazon, don't replay it. Like, that was insane. They kept showing that it was an absolute dumpster fire.
Over and over and over again. Like, goodness gracious, find something else. Like, there's something else you can be filming. Film someone in the stands, for heaven's sake. We just don't need to see it. We saw it once.
Rough, man. Just stop showing that stuff. But yeah, I mean, I don't feel good about LSU next week. It's so funny because I was like, I want it to be undefeated against Alabama so bad. Like, 5-0 Tennessee. I guess Alabama will be 6-0 in there because I don't think they have a bye before the Tennessee game. I think their bye's later. So there's a potential. They have to get their Arkansas this week. And then I'm not sure who's on the calendar next week. I think it's another tough game. I feel like Alabama's in a tough part of their schedule right now. But it's always better to bet on Alabama being undefeated than not being undefeated in a big game. And that would be awesome. Like, the biggest Alabama-Tennessee game in a really, really long time. But I don't feel as great about LSU, and we'll get to LSU in a second. But now that you've had just about a week to think about the Florida game, Ethan, what did you make of it, and did it go about as you expected?
It did. It went about as I expected. I fully expected. I feel like everyone else in Knoxville for Florida to come back after that onside kick. I mean, thank God you cannot move like it. Move a I'm losing the word here, but you can't advance
extend it
onside kick because if you could, Florida would have won that game. But I don't know, that didn't happen. Getting away from doom and gloom, I was really, really, really impressed with the wide receivers who stepped up. Ramel Keaton had obviously probably the greatest catch since Marquez North a while ago in a Tennessee uniform. I mean, Jalen Hyatt stepped up, all these guys stepped up for Cedric Tillman. as you mentioned, he's out with that injury. If those guys don't step up, Hooker doesn't have anyone to throw the ball to. I feel like that offense just kind of sputters. Even if I wrote a piece a little bit ago for SDS on how well I feel like Tennessee will run the ball against Florida, just because of Hooker's ability kind of to get out and his dual threat thing. He hasn't really done too much this season on that. So to see him have a lot of success in the ground and have a lot of success through the air, and obviously just the receivers that were there to help him, that's two big things that I had question marks going into the weekend that they kind of fulfilled in that aspect. And so to see that, to see those question marks answered for me, that's the thing I took from it most, is you've got guys that can step up when they're asked to, and Hooker is looking even better on the ground than he did last season against a Florida defense that was weakened and that you should have been able to take advantage of, especially considering Ventrell Miller was playing, but he wasn't 100%. I think I read somewhere that he actually still had a broken bone in his foot while he was playing, which
same.
Is absurd.
I was also with a broken bone at Neyland. So we're one in the same, me and Ventrell. We are built for this, as Ryan said in the group chat. Gritty performance by me exactly. to make the appearance.
100%. But that should calm the nerves, I feel like, of just about every Tennessee fan seeing that Cedric Tillman is going to be out likely until Alabama, and I would bet after Alabama. They're saying they're hopeful that he'll come back. I doubt it personally. But that should be a sight for sore eyes, that you've got guys that can still make plays, can still move the ball efficiently, like they're supposed to. And obviously we'll see this week, and if that can carry over, if that wasn't just kind of Florida getting deer in the headlights at Neyland with the, 100,000 raucous fans there. LSU, despite it being at 11 a.m. Their time, I feel like there's going to be a pretty decent amount of fans there too that are looking for an upset, because, Brian Kelly and LSU, they kind of struggled, against Florida State at the beginning of the year, but they've looked solid since then. So I think it's going to be a real test for Tennessee. I think the Vols will come out on top, but ultimately, I think what you said earlier about it being kind of scary is absolutely correct. I mean, this is a game that I feel like Tennessee fans are overlooking, but LSU could absolutely get something done in Death Valley. Absolutely.
Yeah, and I mean, LSU, they're sneakily just been really awesome offensively. Like, I think a lot of people's just last memory of LSU to this point was the FSU game and how much of a disaster that was. But it's like they've quietly just calmed down and figured it out. Jaden Daniels has really settled in as their QB1, I think. I'm about to see. All right, I sneezed. Yeah, LSU is number 5 in the SEC right now in scoring, just behind Mississippi, Georgia, and Alabama. They're averaging 39 a game, but you look at it, they've been solid to this point. And really, I'm about to sneeze again. I apologize. Here we go. Nope. Okay, we're good. Made it work. There we go. Wow. That was fun. What was the biggest surprise for you on Saturday in Neyland? What was, from the Tennessee standpoint, what did you think going in that did not end up being the thing?
That's a tough one. I mean, I hate to keep going receivers, but Ramel Keaton, he was the surprise. I even wrote about that, I believe, after the game. I'll talk about a little different than I did earlier. Ramel Keaton being able to step up and do what he did, that really impressed me. Because if he doesn't, Tennessee doesn't win that game, because the end of the first half does not happen without Ramel Keaton. I mean, he had that big catch that everyone's going to remember. He also had a couple more that moved the chains. I believe it was Brew McCoy that ended up in the end zone, when the final bell had sounded. But, I mean, if Ramel Keaton isn't doing his thing, Tennessee doesn't move the ball as well as they did. Another person I was really surprised – not surprised with, but – I guess good to see is Byron Young. Because another thing that people aren't talking about very much is that last play. If Anthony Richardson had time to step into his throw, you never know what could have happened there. I mean, it was just like a 30-yard pass. Mm-hmm. I mean, it wasn't exactly a Hail Mary at this point. And if Byron Young isn't pressuring him, isn't kind of messing with him, messing up that throw, you just never know what could have happened. He played well the entire game. I'm not sure any stand out other than that one. But those two, I feel like, are the biggest that stood out to me.
And I think what will be a welcome addition in Baton Rouge is that, and I mean, welcome in a different sense, is that Anthony Richardson, Tennessee got home a lot, and being there in person and being close, like, you just see so many plays where he should have gone down. Like, most quarterbacks go down. Byron Young, you mentioned, Joshua Joseph's got home a couple times, who I think should start playing a lot more. Tyree West was really good in this game too. So that was like one of my things, is that I think in a normal circumstance, a lot of those Gator fourth down conversions or third down conversions don't happen with a average size quarterback, because Richardson, testament to him, is just gigantic and just a really, really hard quarterback to bring down. So I think Tennessee would have had several more sacks with the average guy, and I think Jane Daniels is not pulling that off. So if Byron Young gets home, he's going down. But that being said, we have seen these kind of quarterbacks just frustrate Tim Banks last year with, I mean, Emory Jones being a good example, Matt Corral, and Jane Daniels, I don't think is, I mean, he's definitely on the Emory Jones level, definitely not the Matt Corral level though, but I think that's interesting if that's cleaned up, because we haven't seen Tennessee deal with that yet. Akron had a quarterback who did that a little bit with an irons, but it's a little bit different when it's Akron versus LSU. So I'm curious to see if that is cleaned up, or if those same issues pop back up of the third and long or fourth and long, and Jane Daniels just scampers away because Tennessee can't get home and they just can't stop quarterback keepers on critical downs.
Yeah, that's actually another thing probably you could take away, exactly, is last season Tennessee could not keep the quarterback in the pocket against Anthony Richardson, who, I mean, he can't really throw the ball. He's not a threat through the air. He's only a threat with his legs. And Tennessee did a fine job keeping him mostly in check. I mean, better than I feel like any other team has, at least on par with what every other team has been able to. Because, I mean, he's a guy that I feel like you can only kind of hope to contain, because he's built like a tank. And, you know, to be able to contain him the way they did, that's nice to see. Now, Jaden Daniels, on the flip side of things, he's not Anthony Richardson by any means, but he's kind of gotten away from it as of late. But against Florida State, he was, I mean, he didn't even think to drop back to pass sometimes. He'd drop back, he'd read like two things and be like, I'm not bothering. I'm just going to run because I know I'm fast. He probably did that 10 times that I counted. And so I don't think he's done that as much lately. I think coaches have been like, hey, dude, like, you're a quarterback. At some point, you have to throw the ball. Like, go through your progressions. Let's actually throw the ball here. And I feel like he's kind of chilled out a little bit. Maybe it could have just been Florida State's defense kind of honing in on him. But that's going to be interesting to see. If they're getting to him too much, it might freak him out a little bit. It might freak Daniels out a little bit enough to where he's going to start scampering more. And that'll be another test. Maybe not as much as Richardson, but it was still on the same level where you're like, hey, Tennessee, this is a guy that can beat you with his legs. He hasn't that much recently to other teams, but he definitely can. So don't allow him to do it. Don't allow him to kind of get into a groove, I guess, in that aspect. Put a little bit of pressure on your defensive back setting into Alabama, because, I mean, that's another story right there. The secondary made Anthony Richardson, even though he only completed like 50% of his passes, made Anthony Richardson look like a competent passing quarterback. And that is not a good thing.
Yes. And it's funny because my wife was getting Petros at the moment when this happened, and always a good decision. Yes, and absolutely. There was two Florida fans next to us, super nice guys, older gentlemen who were, because I'm on the corner with my broken foot, so I got to have the edge and separate a little bit. But Kamal Haddon got banged up on a play, and you probably remember where I'm going with this. Nice. Brandon Turnage goes in. And I look, and I'm just like, every play, I'm just looking to see who's where and all that kind of stuff. And I see Turnage, and I'm like, and I turn to the Florida fan, and I was like, I guarantee they target Turnage here. I guarantee Richardson just saw that Turnage is on the field. And they targeted him 37 yard, just burnt Turnage. And that was the last time we saw Brandon Turnage for the remainder of the game. They don't have any options though. I mean, D. Williams, you made the joke about, like, if we ever see Juwan Mitchell. Well, we've seen him. He's been okay. I'm not sure he's been better than Aaron Beasley, and I might want to go back to Beasley to this point. But D. Williams not playing. Tamari McDonald was bad in this game. I think the kind of scary part is, like, Jalen McCullough and Trey Flowers were also not good. And those are your two veterans that you're just counting on to be – solid. Like, those two have to be solid at the bare minimum. I don't know. I think two things can be true. The secondary can be cooked this year, where people are like, oh, it's going to come back to bite them. I will say the pass rush is legit. And I think people need to understand that like that's going to clear up a lot of these issues in the back end, because Byron Young has been a star. Tyler Barrington, good. But you look at the interior and how many different dudes Rodney Gardner is playing right now. I think Joshua Joseph is going to continue to become more and more of a star. I think you're going to see the pass rush continue to get better and better. And that's the difference. Last year, they had no pass rush and the secondary was having to do a lot in the back end. I think if it's a little bit weaker and more limited this year, I think the pass rush will be something that people need to focus on, because I think that's real and that's coming. I think Tennessee is going to have a, especially when you look at this class and Chindavian Bradley and company coming in, I think Gardner's doing really, really undervalued work that will help the back end for the remainder of this year. What do you think?
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. I mean, Kamal Haddon has been probably, he didn't play very well against Florida, but he's been the one that before Florida was the most consistent. Kamal Haddon. Flowers had played okay, I guess. Outside of that, Warren Burrell has played not great. Jalen McCullough. Jalen McCullough has just been kind of there, I feel like. I mean, we could keep listing guys. Tamari McDonald has played well this season. I feel like that's a bit of a surprise. But there's no one that has been all four games has been there, and that's worrying. So, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. The difference between last year and this year, last year's secondary was terrible as well, but last year's pass rush was not what it is this season. I mean, the Pitt game, Tennessee doesn't win that game if their pass rush isn't all over the quarterback. I mean, whether it be Slovis in the first half, or I don't even remember the name of the guy in the second half. He was so terrible. But
Putty?
For their
team, yeah.
I can't remember either. But for the pass rush to be there often and to be there, you know, just getting in the grill of the quarterback and to be messing them up, kind of ease that on the secondary, that's huge. And I mean, moving forward against better offensive lines, we'll kind of see how that works out. Pitt had a really good offensive line, and Rodney Gunner's group was able to kind of mess them up a bit. And I mean, like I said just a second ago, that's why they won the game. So I feel like the secondary will get better as the season progresses. They always do, but it'll be kind of in a line with everybody else. I mean, everyone else is going to get better as well. So Tennessee's kind of going to stay on this level, I feel like, unless someone just figures it out, or unless D. Williams or Andre Turrentine out of nowhere just becomes, you know, him. I mean, that's really all we're talking about here. And it's not like that's going to happen. So, I mean, what Tennessee has right now is kind of what they're set with. And they just kind of have to hope that that consistency from Haddon and McDonald and sometimes Flowers will be able to kind of carry him to the end of the year until we can get more guys in there.
Last thing as we wrap up here. What does the schedule look like for you now? I think LSU decides whether or not it's 10-2 or 9-3. For me, what does it look like for you the rest of the way?
I think they beat LSU. I think the biggest problem remaining, I mean, everyone's chalking up Alabama and Georgia as a loss. To be totally honest with you, if Tennessee's going to beat Alabama anytime soon, it's going to be this season, but I won't go into that too much. I think the loss on the schedule that isn't Georgia or Alabama is probably Kentucky. I know people hate hearing that, but I don't think the Wildcats are good also. Let me just preface that. I do think the Wildcats are very, very angry and very sick of getting beaten, because, like, I made a joke about this earlier, I feel like, before the Florida game. Florida is to Tennessee what Tennessee is to Kentucky. Like, Florida just wins those games usually. Tennessee just wins those games. It's just kind of how it was. There was a streak of like 27 years or something like that that Kentucky didn't win a football game against Tennessee. I feel like Kentucky is just going to come in like, hey, we're a decent football team this year. You guys are a really good football team this year. The intensity is going to be up to a 12. I'm not necessarily saying the Vols are going to lose. That is definitely one to circle, though. I feel like people have just kind of overridden the fact that Tennessee is going to come in and just beat the brakes off of Kentucky. And I just don't think that's going to be the case this season. I think it'll be close. I think I still want to leave 10-2 right now, to be honest with you. I still think Tennessee will probably beat Kentucky. I think they're going to beat LSU. I really think there's a chance they could beat Alabama. I mean, Alabama's secondary is not good. They're just not good. It's a weakness that is a little weird, a little surprising on a Nick Saban-led team. But that secondary is the chink in the armor this season. I mean, among an Alabama team that otherwise is pretty much flawless, I will admit, I still think Alabama wins just for that fact, because they just have more experience. They have more guys. Tennessee could absolutely mess with them, though. It could be a high scoring game that, you know, comes down to the wire a little bit, especially being in Knoxville.
I mean, Tennessee took them to the fourth quarter in Tuscaloosa last year. It is funny, before the year, if you had told me I would feel better about Tennessee, Alabama than Tennessee, Georgia, I would not have believed you. But that's definitely where I'm at, where I flipped a little bit, where everyone was like kind of picking Tennessee over Georgia in the preseason. Like your coworker, Connor O'Gara, on Paul Feinbaum saying he has Tennessee over Georgia. And I flipped. I was on that boat before the year, but I'm 1000% with you that I would, gun to my head, have to say Tennessee Bama feels more likely of a possibility, which is wild.
Just because you got to think, I mean, we're in Knoxville, that plays to Tennessee's favor, obviously. The secondary for Alabama is as low as it's been in a pretty decent while. Tennessee's defense legitimately looks decent this year. If they could get to Bryce Young, kind of mess it up a little bit. The receivers aren't their best, I feel like. I mean, they're not bad by any means, but they're not, you know, as tip-top shape as Alabama receivers usually are. I don't know. There's just, like I said a little bit ago, there's chinks in the armor. Not necessarily saying they're going to do it, but I mean, I think you'd be crazy to say that Alabama is just going to wipe the floor with Tennessee like they have in the past this season. I think this is a different Tennessee unit, a different beast right now. They're feeling it, especially if they're undefeated going into Alabama. There's going to be definitely something you could put behind there.
I agree. Ethan, what can the good folks look out for you from Saturday Down South and the crew over there this week?
Yeah, so I'm on Saturday Down South tomorrow on the news desk. I'll be covering all, I guess, 5 SEC games, because South Carolina and Florida games were moved. So I believe there's 5 SEC games tomorrow that we'll be keeping you up to coverage with our team over there at Saturday Down South. And then I'll have a column. I think Sunday it's going to run this week. And then I'll have bowl projections that I do every week that'll be going out on Monday for the SEC and the Big Ten. So keep an eye out for those.
Awesome. Yeah. Ethan, thank you so much for the time, per usual, and I will talk to you next week.
Awesome. Thank you.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.